football on Off the Ball.
You know, I think you could argue maybe Graham Burke or Jack Byrne, technically right now, are more influential to what Shamrock Rovers do.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Colin Bivik, Arthur O'D. Good morning, lads. How are things?
Morning. AJ O'D and ST Hannon. Oh, maybe that would be the new trend now because JJ Spahn leads the US Open.
There you go.
Four under.
Yeah, I always like the idea of doing that. Just using the initials.
Yeah.
Makes yourself sound slightly more important.
I think you can do it with JJ.
Yeah.
Sure. John Joseph, whatever you want. JP, of course.
Yeah.
Of Ray and JP fame.
Yeah.
But JJ there, who's, I think JJ Spahn's best performance at a major to date was tied 23rd at the 2022 Masters, which I think was the one that Scottie Scheffler won for the first time. Roy McIlroy beat him in a playoff earlier this year, JJ Spahn.
So is it meant to be? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Well, for Rory, it was looking good, wasn't it? So his front nine was started on the 10th tee. And it was decent. And all this talk we had yesterday on the show, Shane, we're talking about Paul McGinley's comments. Did you see that beforehand? Saying he looked a bit stressed and he's a bit worried about his body language. And myself and Arthur were debating the merits of those comments. But what's undoubted is that McIlroy doesn't seem to be publicly, at least, enjoying his victory lap as much as people anticipated. Maybe privately he is. But for his front nine yesterday, he was very impressive. And then the back nine happens. But this is Oakman CZ, baby. This is what happens.
True.
Shane Lowry didn't hit a birdie all day, but did hit an eagle. historically, no one's ever done that.
Sums up golf.
That hole. Hauled out from 160 yards to very little reaction because I think he was just so downtrodden by that point. He had three double bogeys, Lowry. Mm-hmm.
Not a great round.
And we were, this time yesterday, we were excited about Lowry's prospects.
Yeah.
Were you?
Compared to McIlroy.
We're always optimistic ahead of a major about Shane Lowry, I think.
Are we? Well, I'm 50-50, I'd say, historically about whether I'm positive for Lowry. I kind of always think McIlroy has something in him. Mm. But it was just pure form guide going in. Even the Canadian Open just gone where McIlroy spectacularly misses the cut. Lowry's leading in the final day, just like he did in the final day in Oakman the last time it was there.
Yeah.
9 years ago. But it's a wild tournament. Like it's great fun to watch as a neutral because
the course is mental.
It's unbelievable. Like, who was it? McIlroy was saying there. He finished level par yesterday. And he said it was the top 10 performances of his career. He finished level par.
It's mad, isn't it?
Like, it makes Spahn's achievement all the more impressive. Like, to be 4-under 66. Because 70 par cards. And who was the other one? Tristan Lawrence as well from South Africa.
He looked good around too. 67.
So
Brooks Koepka's hanging around there in a tie.
Brooks Koepka's under par, and I think is it John Rahm's under par? So they're the only major winners who are under par.
Yeah, Rahm's one under,
so far. But it is already, obviously, like Scottie Scheffler started really well yesterday. I thought he's gonna run away with Laz in the very first hole he played. But it will be fascinating to see the who's who of who's cut come very late tonight, Irish time.
Some big names.
So 6:25 Irish time is when Lowry, McIlroy and Rose tee off. Now Lowry, look, our McIlroy was the best of the three, but in the field overall, he's probably doing above average, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's about 8 off the lead.
8 off the lead, yeah, 4
Whereas
over.
McIlroy, or Lowry's 9 over, I think.
Yeah.
So that even by US Open standards, that could be a tricky one to get out of.
Yeah. What's the worst score? So George Duangmini on 16 over, with an 86 was the worst score of yesterday. But you can have sympathy for a lot of players because a lot of players down on 12, 13, 14 over, 11 over, 10 over. Like that's a nasty, was it a sadistic course I saw someone describing it as?
Yeah, and it's subtly traumatising to the players because there's nothing physically that looks that daunting about it. It's not particularly undulating or hilly, but the grass just betrays every technique that a golfer has.
Yeah.
The pace of the greens. Did you see that drive that McIlroy had? It was like 289 yards something, which is the longest drive of the year for him.
Mm.
And it bounced on the fairway. And by normal standards, it would have been an average enough drive from a player of that calibre. And did you see that? It would have bounced and absolutely flaked on from that. And the commentators were laughing incredulously. It got so far that the walk pass for the people going across the course, that was open to people because they thought, well, there's no way the ball's going to go down there. And it just stopped in front of them.
Yeah. Lowry is in a tie for a 133rd position. Yeah, 9 over after his first round. And yeah, I suppose the Irish hopes, well, they'll lie on Rory back in 4 over. 8 shots off the lead is certainly not a killer. He's tied for 62nd, but starting off his second round well today, you never know. You just never know. After the first round of the Masters, a lot of people said, nah, it's dust.
Do you enjoy when sport is that mad for its participants, when conditions are
chaos ensues, yes.
Well, conditions is probably the inaccurate word for it, because it's the actual permanent nature of the course. And if the conditions are wayward, it can sometimes benefit them. Mm. They kind of need a bit of rain and wind to help them out here. But yesterday, they didn't get those conditions to help them with the course itself. But it is... it's kind of sheer lunacy to watch it at times. Or do you want to watch them play at their best?
Oh, you want to see the chaos. I think as a fan of any sport, you want to see a little bit of chaos sometimes. When things get chaotic. Towards the tail end of Armagh Galway, for example, the All-Ireland final last year, things started to get chaotic. Yeah. You know.
But you know, in the Masters, then you could see players playing like amazing golf. Not just Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau up until like the third hole of the final round. Mm. So they're able to be themselves and play really well, but it's still quite challenging because it's like... all the holes have a kind of characteristic to them. Whereas this just seems like a toned down version of crazy golf.
Yeah. Well, anything could happen today. And do you know why anything could happen today, lads?
Friday the 13th.
It's Friday the 13th. And I've been doing some deep research. And by deep research, I mean in the last 2 minutes, I've quickly opened up to look up some of the biggest superstitions in sport. In GA terms, did you know about these superstitions? You hear about people putting on the one sock first. Tipperary's Brendan Marles always put his left sock on first and left boot next. Kerry's Paul Gainey follows the same routine. There are others. The Canning family, of course, Ollie, Joe and Deirdre. The mother, Josephine, used to stitch miraculous medals into the back of their shorts for big games. Derek McGrath as well would go into the cathedral in Waterford City before big games. This is just the ones that I know of.
They barely ever played in Waterford, didn't they?
That's true. the Tyrone footballers stopped shaving, remember, in 2008 until they won the Sam Maguire trophy. And, well, it came to fruition. And then the... with Sunday, the unluckiest day of the year. That's the old one where they used to cancel GA fixtures on that big day. But yeah, there's some big ones. Michael Jordan was another. But yeah, anything could happen today, lads, because it's...
Are you afraid of this day, or do you embrace
it? Not at all. Didn't they change... remember the change there?
Do you walk on the ladders?
I don't mind any of that. Yeah. Don't mind.
He's a man of science.
You're a man of wonder based on science. Would I explain?
Do, please.
Space.
Yeah, true.
If ever you find yourself in a tricky patch on air, I find, you revert to space.
I do. Because we're floating.
Get you out of the situation.
Yeah, I say it to people all the time. If you're getting worried about anything out in the world, then there's a lot to worry about and there's a lot of bad news. But we are floating on a ball of rock through space at great speed. And ultimately, your boss pissing you off or someone annoying you doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Listen,
one way to look at it.
I suggested a reband for you know, there with St. Hannon.
Yeah, I see where you're going here. Go on.
Don't be calling him Alexander Arnold anymore. All right. I thought I had the respect for him to call the guy by his surname all these years talking about him. I never called him by his first name. I said, I don't know the guy. Yeah. Alexander Arnold, number 66, was to the deep pain of parents across the world when their kid asked for that name to be on the jersey. If shops still charged by letter and number, that was extortion. If they remortgaged the gaff to get Alexander Arnold, number 66, on the back of your jersey, fear that no more, Real Madrid supporters. Alexander Arnold, 66. Meet Trent 12. Now, he explained this. He said on the continent, he found that people struggle with double barrel names in Central Europe. So he said to make things easier for everyone, rather than being called Alexander or Arnold or a mishmash of all of them, we'll just go with Trent. And that's a fair enough explanation until you see all of his social media accounts have rebranded to Trent.
It's all a marketing move, obviously. There's a lot of... money at stake, I think, when you move to a club like Real Madrid. You become a Galactico and your brand goes to a higher echelon than it ever was at Liverpool or any other club for that matter. So, yeah, just thought it was a very interesting press conference. And he even kind of reverted himself at one point where he said, I've been dreaming of this day for a long time. And obviously he goes back then and says, by the way, earlier when I said long time, I meant a couple of weeks as opposed to a couple of years. He was very, very... keen to stress that this was not a long-term thing. And then he starts speaking Spanish and you're like, okay, Trent, you have been plotting and planning this thing for some time.
Sorry, it was unbelievably impressive.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the language, it was the accent.
He had it to a T.
He had everything down, right? He was so comfortable saying it. And I do wonder, was that, like, did he just learn that bit off and he can't do anything else
in Spanish?
That's
what I was going to ask. Was he asked? So I didn't see. Was he asked quite? Because I didn't see all of it.
There was that. It reminded me of a Family Guy scene where this guy speaks English to Brian the dog, who's Spanish, and then Brian's like, "Oh, you speak English," and he's like, "No, no." Just that part and this part explaining it. And then Brian says, what? And he was like, hey. And when Trent Alexander, or Trent, went to the press conference afterwards and was asked questions in Spanish, he reverted to English. So he may have just literally learned this off by heart for the last fortnight or so. But here's the thing for me. So what if he's been learning Spanish for a long time? What's the big problem?
There's not a big problem. It's the fact that he keeps going on about the fact that this all came together very quickly. I haven't been planning and plotting this for a long time, but to speak Spanish that well, you can't. He says he was learning for a few months. You've been learning Spanish longer than a handful of months. You know, if you learned Spanish for 1 year and did a couple of classes just a week, which is professional football, I'd say that you don't only have time for a couple of classes a week, probably. You know. That's the level you'd probably get to. So I think he's been Duolingo, whether it's Duolingo or Spanish lessons, he's been doing it for longer than a few months.
Look, it's a continental game, no matter who you play with now at the top level. Mm. So maybe he just wanted to get closer to the likes of Darwin Nunez, to Luis Diaz, learned a bit of Spanish.
Yeah, do you believe that? Yeah,
he can play on their side. Mm. You know, there's loads of reasons for it, but I'm speaking with Liverpool supporters and they feel betrayed all over again yesterday.
Yeah,
it's like, why? Like, this guy again explained, loves Liverpool, thanked them for everything that they ever did for him, and they should thank him for everything he did for them to help them. He was such a central part in the last decade to everything that they did well, and he's gone off to do this new thing, and what of it? Brilliant. You should be celebrated, this guy, that he's embraced Spanish. In 2 minutes yesterday, Trent spoke more Spanish than Gareth Bale did in 9 years.
Yeah.
And Bale was castigated for not embracing the culture.
And yet he still won a Champions League with him, and it didn't matter ultimately. And like, it's what he does, the club, that's going to ultimately define him. Like, you can speak all the Spanish you want, but if he has an absolute putrid start to the La Liga season next year, your Spanish is going to be used for apologising to fans.
I can't see a world where he has a putrid time at Real Madrid or it goes terribly wrong. I just can't see that. Now, I'd struggle also to see a world where he gets that Ballon d'Or that he craves. I'm thinking of the position he plays, right? If you're Real Madrid, there's loads of times in La Liga of a given season that they concede really sloppy goals. Mm. If you're a Real Madrid defender, you're not overly blamed for defensive errors. They're expected to play a bit of ball and to attack and play the Real Madrid way. And the one thing we know that Trent can do is he can play ball.
Yeah.
He should love life at Real Madrid. He'll really enjoy it. And with Xabi Alonso and his system, he could play in a raft of positions. Play right back, right wing back. He'd probably go into the middle a bit, which he loves doing. Mm. Probably play in the back three if Alonso went for a back five. There's an array of things he can do with the ball. He can spread it. The one thing they've been missing without Toni Kroos is that ability of a long-range passer properly in the pitch. The Trent should do really well here at Real Madrid. But I can't see a world where it's going to be a disaster. It'll be interesting when Danny Carvajal comes back, because he's basically missed a year and he's their first choice right back. I think he's club captain as well, isn't he? Mm. So if he plays and he goes back in, then Trent may have to adjust. It's a bit like when David Beckham joined, Luis Figo was in his position and they had to do a bit of a role reversal there. I think the first game when Beckham played for Madrid, both he and Figo played in the same side.
Mm. Which is mad when you think about it.
But Beckham ended up doing all right at Real Madrid. I just can't. I think he's going to do well at Real Madrid. I don't think he's going to be a contender for individual awards well, because there's going to be about three other players on his own team if Real Madrid perform that will get the award ahead of him.
Mm.
But I can't see it going badly.
Can you understand Liverpool fans' renewed ire after the press conference yesterday? Like, does it give more meaning to the fans when they all give out about Jurgen Klopp telling them don't tell us what to think or what to think about this whole thing? But does yesterday change it? Because it probably adds to the hypothesis that he was planning this for a while.
No, like, Florian Wurzel's turn up and he'll speak English. Like, it's just respect. Like, it's not a problem. Like, I don't think anyone, any right-minded person to be too worried about it. Like,
I'm hearing very logical people losing their mind over this.
Why? Yeah.
I don't know.
Over what aspect?
Like, it's
what?
The Liverpool side of it, as people feel, again, betrayed. It was like, this guy was a snake all along.
Proven
I, like,
himself.
I don't see anything that he did that was that wrong. I'm sorry. I see Fergus Scholes asked me, did I feel the same when Ronaldo F off to Madrid? Yeah, absolutely. Like, he actually waited a year longer than he wanted to. Like, he wanted to go in 2008. Mm. And Ferguson said, would he stay for one more year? And he did. So Trent's probably been thinking about leaving for a while, but he stayed for another year. The people move on, like. You celebrate the time that you have. Shreyer Cantona just retired out of nowhere if you want to keep it to United and ask me about it. He's retired out of the blue.
I think if
he left and you're like, all right, whatever.
The Ronaldo example isn't quite the same because he's not a boyhood player.
I think that boyhood thing is nonsense. That's because of where you're born, suddenly you have more responsibility. Like, Trent has just as many ambitions as Virgil van Dijk and Mo Salah had in the last year.
No, but maybe
he had the same decision to make.
I disagree with that.
No, I don't.
His family lived there.
Yeah.
Based there. Everything like that. He's much more connected with the people around him than...
Yeah, that's fine. Like, that's all true. But he doesn't have to feel the massive weight of responsibility and feel that he has to be morally more aware of where he goes next just because he's from that area. As long as you're successful at that team that you represent over a number of years, which he was, by the way, I don't see what he owes Liverpool. And by the way, he did a video statement to say, I'm leaving, and this is why I'm leaving. And he said it again yesterday in the press conference. So people are annoyed at what exactly? What element of this are they annoyed at? Is it because he's only recently decided that he's going to go, is it? And he's pretending that's what he's saying to everyone. But Liverpool fans think, no, for years now he's been out the door. Is that the problem?
Well, he's been plotting it for longer than he's letting on. I personally think, because obviously the Spanish language is one example of that. But tell also,
me, okay, if that's true, right? Why is that a problem?
I don't necessarily think
he was part of a Premier League winning side that walked the league, and he was central to it.
Do you think he'd get more criticism if Liverpool, more or less criticism if Liverpool had finished, say, fourth? Is it because Liverpool fans are saying he's leaving a team on the high?
Yeah, because I also thought, well, that's a perfect time to leave when you just won the league. It's like, let them off. I don't know about finishing fourth, if that would have been more of an issue.
I'd say
if he had his time back again, the one thing he would have done, he probably wouldn't have said a thing, right? And then he would have just left now. And it was like, and then we would have got the news trickling through from our sources, and it would have been Real Madrid are going to sign Trent Alexander. He's not going to sign a new contract. Mm. And he's going to go off now. And then the first time we hear Trent talk about this at all was the unveiling press conference yesterday. So there was no farewell video. There was no being booed by the fans when he came on. Mm. There was just essentially no news about what Trent is going to do with his contract. And then he shows up at Real Madrid and explains it. Mm. And I think that would have been more palatable for people. But with him doing what he thought was the honourable thing, I'm going to do a video to explain why I'm leaving with a few games to go after we've won the league when nothing's on the line. I'm going to try and be honest with you. And the response he got was to be booed.
Yeah.
I'd say if he had his time back, he said, I wouldn't have bothered with the video.
Yeah.
If you're going to be like that to me and like explain the rationale, sure, why bother?
Look, I think time heals a lot here, and I think in a couple of years, maybe not this season, next season upcoming, but if he goes back to Liverpool as an opposition player, I think in a couple of years he'll get a decent reception. I think it's quite fresh at the minute for Liverpool fans and quite tough for them to swallow, no doubt. But Liverpool are signing really well in the transfer window. They're champions of England and they'll be back with a bang next year and they'll forget all about him.
Pounderstown 4, yeah. Jan Vanagur of Hesselink was the longest name on the back of the jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And we have Andrej Kanchelskis.
Yes.
Must. That was it. That would cost you an absolute fortune back in the day.
I had a Kanchelskis 14 already.
I had, I genuinely considered getting David May on the back of my jersey because it would have been such a handy price.
True. There's a lot of May jerseys around Cavan, I think.
And do you know what I settled for? Andy Cole.
Andy Cole.
And he was kind of ridiculed at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
This was 1999.
Just after joining... No, sorry, yeah, he'd been there a few years, yeah.
And people, why'd you get Andy Cole in the back?
Yeah.
And to this day, he doesn't get enough respect.
Top scorer that year, wasn't he? Or no, York maybe was top scorer.
Never took penalties.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Danger man. There was other news in football overnight as well. Well, yesterday evening, Thomas Frank signing a deal as Tottenham Hotspur boss until 2028. Leaves Brentford after 7 years in charge. New head coach. He becomes Tottenham's fourth permanent boss since 2021. How do we feel about this? It was the writing was on the wall. It was the only name really being mooted.
Yeah, it was. He's actually done remarkably well because if you look at his CV, he doesn't have the most extensive experience at senior levels. So he was a Denmark underage manager at various age groups. It's a bit like Lee Carsley's doing now with the 21s won again last night under Lee Carsley. Harvey Elliott scored. And then from there, Frank got his first job at Brandby and then went to Brentford as the assistant manager for 2 years and then he's 7 years as senior manager. So that's it really, and 51 years old, so it's taking his time. It seems like a smart enough move, like it's just hard to know
does it
how Spurs will treat him, because Daniel Levy has appointed an outrageous number of permanent managers in the last, Well, like, let's take it up from the 2019 Champions League final that they last. Mm. Since then, there's been loads of people in that door. Nuno, Mourinho, Kante, and so let's hope they give him the time. But he was doing a fine job at Brentford. But I suppose the thing with Brentford is, you know, how far can you take it? He did really well. Probably, you know, a contending European club in another few years' time would have been a serious achievement. But he got them up, and they're part of an established Premier League era now. Yeah. Even though every year I always think, oh, Brentford are going to be in trouble. And then they pull off results, you know, subtly Saturday 3 o'clock games where you're not really paying attention, and Brentford have won 2 or 3 nil. Mm. And then they might lose 4 in a row, but they'll come back again. So Frank always seemed to be in control of the situation. An incredibly open manager as well. He let the Sky cameras in a couple of months ago to have a day in a life for a Premier League manager. He's always willing to talk. There'll be more scrutiny on him now, so it'll be interesting to see if Spurs continue to be Spurs like they were last season under Ange Postecoglou, how Frank will deal with the additional scrutiny, because he just hasn't had that with Brentford.
Yeah.
From the Spurs' perspective, look, they probably were right, in my opinion, to get rid of Ange Postecoglou just because of the Premier League campaign. I think, look, the Europa League was an unbelievable achievement considering the season they had. It had been so long since they won a trophy and all that, but it was a disastrous final. Like, let's be honest, like, it was a shocking game against another poor team. They lost 22 Premier League games last season. Like, I like the idea of what Ange tries to do and plays attacking football, and we're going to play our own thing and don't mind the opposition, and that's great when it works. But it worked in such... it didn't work in such spectacular fashion last season. Something probably had to change. So I'd say it's a sensible appointment.
Yeah, so he brings with him Justin Cochrane as his assistant. He's also brought head of performance Chris Haslam and first-team analyst Joe Newton, and then assistant coach Andreas Jorgensen comes from Manchester United as well. I think it's an obvious move for Thomas Frank, as in, I can see why he's done it. It makes complete sense for him. He's probably still lives in the same family home. It's a massive club, brilliant stadium, really good squad on paper, albeit you didn't see that in the Premier League last year. And yet, I'm not sure if it's a smart move. Like, working under Daniel Levy and seeing that he has sacked a manager who has won a first trophy at the club for 17 years. Mm. The only way it is up in the league. They're not going to finish 17th last season. They're out. Like, you'd imagine they will finish much closer to at least the top 10 next season. They have to, because of the budget alone, they have to finish in the top 10 next season. You would think. There's no guarantees. But yeah, I'm just not sure it's the right move. I think another 18 months, this could go sour. All of a sudden, what's Thomas Frank's position like then? Whereas he could have done another season at Brentford.
Are you to suggest that you'd be a fool to take the job?
I'm on two sides of this, because if I was him, I probably would have taken the job as well. Mm. In that it's the obvious move. You have to move up in your career, and Tottenham are a bigger club than Brentford. They just are. Mm-hmm. So you have to move up in your career and take that risk. But I'm just saying it could well backfire, and if it backfires, no one will be surprised. Because
Do you know what his first competitive game is?
When his first competitive game is?
And who it's against and what it's in.
Oh, the Super Cup.
Yeah, yeah. Against Paris Saint-Germain. That's his first competitive match.
He could win a trophy in his first game.
So obviously he goes from never having coached in Europe at all to now coaching the Champions League. Mm. So the thing that the players will have to be patient with is that this manager will also be learning at that level.
Yeah. And there's no time for patience.
And that's an interesting dynamic to have. Whatever about there being no time, it probably is the reality of the situation that, like, he'll have to be upfront about the fact that, like, this is going to be totally new to him. Not just the team and the environment and location and stadium and all that and expectations. It's the actual calendar and schedule. Mm. It's going to be way busier than he's used to. Brentford have a week between games most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's an interesting appointment. How many Premier League managers, you like this one, how many Premier League managers have there been where the first and last name are both first names? Do you get me?
Oh yeah, I do, yeah. So we're talking about like David James, Gareth Barry type things.
Exactly. But I'm putting you live.
Do you have it?
No, I actually don't. Oh, right. I actually don't. I'm hoping the YouTubers will let us know.
Is anyone's first name Ferguson?
Don't think so. No, I don't think so. We'll come up with someone. Moyes isn't a first name either before you go there. You can't just start naming every single name there is.
Silva. Marco Silva.
Is Silva a first name?
Silva Jata.
Okay.
Plays for Nottingham Forest.
We'll allow it. Yeah, we'll allow it. Let us know in the YouTube comments. I just don't know. Arthur, Thomas Frank. In terms of the decision from him itself, like, do you think it's a good move?
I don't. Yeah, and I don't care too much about his thing. I it'll be fine. I'm sure whatever will have play out will probably be back to normal.
What do you mean you don't care too much about his thing?
Like, it's like he'll be fine. He'll be fine. He's not, you know what I mean? He'll go in and he'll do his job, and no more than Nuno, I think.
But
whatever,
that's bad.
Whatever comes, yeah, but he'll be fine after it. I think he's perfectly equipped. He'll be fine. I don't think it's going to have any negative effect on him if it goes.
Yeah, probably. Look, that, though, let's chat about that. That is interesting, right? Because the Spurs, what is the Spurs' career trajectory
afterwards?
Yeah.
Coaching the USA national team. Yeah, you'd wonder. Like, as in, what's Ange Postecoglou's next move?
Yeah, I would like, if it goes spectacularly wrong for Thomas Frank at Spurs, what's his level after that? Because people are just like, oh, we're getting to the stage now where it's at Spurs. It was like, oh, that happens at Spurs under Daniel Levy.
What's spectacularly wrong? Because they finished 17th, so it gets relegated. Is that spectacularly wrong?
No, I mean, spectacularly wrong is like, you know, despite Spurs' results last year and place, they're one of the highest scorers in the league.
Mm.
So, like, I'm talking about, like, the way it was for Nuno at Spurs, like, not scoring goals. They beat Man City in their first game under Nuno. But other than that, there was nothing to remember it by. So if it's unmemorable, it's at least with Ange, like, there was memorable matches. So that's just, like, he makes no impact at all. They're going absolutely nowhere. They're not going to improve in the situation from last year. He has to go. Does the next employer say, aye, at Spurs, don't worry about it?
Mm. I think if he has a relatively poor time at Tottenham, he will be seen as a manager in the market with Premier League experience and then Champions League coaching experience. So your level is you could go into an Athletic club or a Bayer Leverkusen or some team with European football at stake and still be sought after, because if you've coached in the Premier League, best league in the world for many people. So it's, I don't
true.
Know. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
I must tell Dermot Keenan. And others have blamed me. I saw the Luis Diaz goal for Colombia against Argentina.
Just watched it this morning.
And sensationally runs half the pitch. There's a great goal by John Barnes for England in the 80s, and it's kind of similar to it. And you don't see, you know, I love those goals where a player takes on the defence, taking on like three or four lads at a time.
Any questions around the defence?
Ah, yeah, totally, yeah.
Yeah.
But for those type of goals, it's like Georgie Kinclancy's goal for Manchester City. Do you question the defence? A little bit. But it was the ingenuity and the actual courage to do what he did. Mm. I'm all about that for taking on lads.
We've got some names of managers with first and last names. Steve Bruce.
Yeah.
Scott Parker. Kevin Keegan.
Yeah.
Roy Evans.
Is Evans
a first name? You're kind of reaching there, David, with that one. But
George Graham, of course.
George Graham.
Jadon Sancho.
Well, he's not a manager for starters, but thanks for playing. So we're going to obviously get into the weekend's GA with Finian Hanley later on, but can we talk predictions, permutations, et cetera, because
yeah.
I know it's only 16 teams becoming 12.
Yeah.
Still, it's a massive weekend and 8 cracking games in the All-Ireland football series.
No one's out, first of all. Secondly, Armagh through as winners.
Yeah.
They play Galway. They've only made 2 changes. They're 15, so they're going out strong on paper.
See, Rory Grugan is stuck on the bench for Soupy Campbell coming in, which is an interesting move. Obviously, rest and Rory.
Kerry are through. Monaghan are through.
Well, yes. Yeah. Down are through.
Meath are through and Down are through.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, what, 5? So everyone else. So there's 11 spots here.
Yes. Because the Donegal, Mayo, Tyrone, Cavan group, any sequence.
So is that the 2-point group?
That is the 2-2-2-2 group, yeah. That is the Desmond 2-2 group. Whereas are Dublin guaranteed? No. So Armagh 4 points, Dublin 2, Galway 1, Derry 1. No, Dublin are far from guaranteed. So even though Armagh are already through in that group, that group is fascinating, because Armagh against Galway, repeat of last year's All-Ireland final, Armagh would probably want to knock out one of their close rivals in Galway. And Omar Brosnan was kind of on with you lads during the week saying that. And then the Dublin Derry game is just a fascinating encounter. But only a point separate in them. It's a winner takes all sort of game. Draw would probably suit Dublin slightly more. It's hard to call that match. It's very hard to call that match. And even you've been making the point on the show that Derry haven't won a game this year, and yet they're still a good team.
Good side, like, yeah.
Which is mad. like, but topping the groups is so important. So even if you don't look at that group, even if you look at the Donegal Mayo group, if you want to have All Ireland ambitions, and you only need look at the last 2 years as an example, the All Ireland finalists last year, Donegal and Armagh, I think I'm right in saying, both topped their groups. The previous year, Dublin, Kerry, All Ireland finalists, both topped their groups. So if you want to have All Ireland ambitions, in that Donegal, Mayo, Tyrone, Cavan group, you really are looking at whoever tops that group as the true All Ireland contenders. Of course, who finishes second and third are still in with a shout, goes without saying. But whoever tops these groups is in a serious position.
Cork Roscommon will be very interested in Leash.
How do you feel about that?
Roscommon have been very unconvincing all year. They're on a point and Cork are on nothing. But I don't know if Cork could actually say that. This hasn't been the same under Davy Burke this year.
No.
But Cork were atrocious against Meath. They did nothing. But I don't know if the only county that they can play at all with any substance whatsoever at the moment is Kerry.
Yeah.
Which then leaves Roscommon being closer to Meath, so that could be another underperformance. But when it's all on the line and Cork actually have to do something, then that's probably when you back them the most.
Roscommon had a very good Allianz Leagues. Obviously got promoted from Division 2. I'm just looking back. They beat Cork by 14 points down in Páirc-Uí-Chaoimh in the league at the start of March. Means nothing, obviously, heading into this weekend. And it's tough to beat a team a couple of times in a row.
Well, the last time that Cork got hammered by a team and played them again.
True.
It went okay.
True.
So if they can channel that.
Yeah.
We were talking about different quality levels and, in fact, a different code.
Yeah. I think Cork are going to bring something this weekend, and it's a neutral venue. There's just something about it. It's a spicy fixture. Convinced by the format, like the fact that I know only four teams kind of go out this weekend, and yet it keeps the likes of the Louth Clare game with some sort of modicum of interest in it.
Well, it's funny. I know like four teams go out, but as you're saying, like it's like for the third place teams to do anything else in the year would be such an incredible story that it would almost be worth it. For any sort of lack of jeopardy. Like I'm kind of happy enough that it'll be still 12 teams left and you still have so many kind of great games. But then at the same token, and Mars is pointing it out, like it's like in a weird way, it's arguably like it's one of the biggest weekends at all for Monaghan Down. Like,
yeah, I see you and Shawnee in the comments, like, Down finishing top shin, us Down men get on a roll, we hard to stop.
But if you win at the weekend and you're kind of saying like you're just playing a team that's going to be
wrecked.
So you could, like, there's a serious shot of getting into an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
Which is something going. Like, I don't think many people would have predicted that.
No, and the winner of that Monaghan Down game will fancy themselves to take a scalp.
Yeah, and it's incredible from a Down point of view, even, I know, from Monaghan. But, like, to go from...
relegation.
Talchin last year. Like, yeah,
relegated to Division 3 this year.
Yeah, and it's great. Like, I've never known a football championship like it.
The argument for that, not to use my own county, but it is a good example. 2 years ago, Monaghan did finish third in their group, played Kildare away. Well, it was at a neutral venue, but a home game for Kildare, beat them, and then beat Armagh in penalties in the quarterfinal. And then, so they finished third in a group and get to an All Ireland semi final.
Probably should have beaten the Dubs.
Possibly could have beaten the Dubs that day in a semi final. So teams can finish third in the group and still have a pretty decent championship.
That was the last big Fenton masterclass, wasn't it?
Yes. That day.
It's unbelievable.
He only retired a year earlier.
I know, yeah.
But look, the hope is still there for teams to finish third. And funny enough, Louth, having had such an incredible year and winning a Leinster title, they've been purring this group so far. Yeah. They've lost to Monaghan and Down. But they can get a draw against Clare and still go through with just 1 point from their group.
Yeah, it's funny if Meath are true and say they go around further again and Louth finish their season this weekend, who have had the better season?
Well,
Meath are making progress, but Louth did the
it's
ultimate.
It's still Louth.
That's the thing, because we were watching that Leinster final, which was amazing in itself, like, and will be remembered. It was like kind of not irrelevant to what happens next, but they've done so well. And Ger Brennan made that point that time, as like, we're Leinster champions now and remember that.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the Rory McIlroy thing. It's like, can you enjoy the fact that you've done the slam? Yeah. And just get on with the rest of your season, but he's more in the mind of like, no, I have to improve.
Who's getting through? This is the horrible part. Who's getting through in the Armagh, Galway, Dublin, Derry group? So let's look at the table. So you have obviously Armagh are through, and top on 4 points.
I'll go Derry will miss out.
Derry to miss out.
Yeah, I'll go. They'll have the anomaly of the statistic of never winning a game in 2025.
In fairness, it's hard to see past that argument. working back up the way, Group 3, down Monaghan, Louth, Clare. Well, it's shootout territory in those two games.
I'll go Clare missing out.
Clare missing out. And who to top the group?
Monaghan.
Okay, division or Group 2, you have Kerry, Meath, Roscommon, Cork.
I'll go Roscommon missing out.
The rebel inside you is strong. Group 1, best of luck. Ballygall, Mayo, Tyrone, Cavan.
I'll go Cavan to miss out.
Because the Cavan...
I was very close with Mayo.
If Tyrone beat Cavan and Donegal beat Mayo, which are two quite likely scenarios, Cavan, even though Mayo have a far superior points difference over them, Cavan would go through on the head-to-head.
Yeah.
So Cavan could lose and still go through.
Cavan just have to match Mayo's.
Just match Mayo's result. That's a mad group. That's mad. And then you wouldn't back again. And then Cavan will play probably away from home in a preliminary or in a preliminary quarterfinal and possibly take out some decent team. You wouldn't be surprised.
Everyone's looking. Yeah, so we're all looking at Cavan. Because imagine Donegal missed out.
And they could well. Do you know, Mayo, Morris Brosnan, I was listening to him on with yourself during the weekend. He was like, well, what? Where are Mayo? What Mayo is going to show up? And you would not be surprised in the slightest if Mayo lost by 10 points to Donegal, beat them by 10 points. Well, they're not going to beat a Jim McGuinness Donegal by 10 points. But, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if they push them close and get over the line by a point or two. Mm. It's just a fascinating.
It'll be good to chat with Finian Hanley about it because of the specifics about why all these mad permutations might happen.
Yeah, it's mad. We'll get into it more at the Tottenham Cup as well. We can't forget about Arthur. I know Sligo are in action this weekend. Yeah, giving their due credence.
Wait for Man on Saturday evening.
How do you feel about that one?
They've not been playing terribly well, but you never know. Like it'll probably semi-final is probably about their limit. You know, not their limit. Sorry, their expectation.
Mm.
So they'll definitely be expecting to win.
Yeah.
But after that, then it kind of becomes a bit tougher. Like, you wouldn't really... Like, if Clare don't win that, there's probably... They'll be... That's their
base.
Or
Offaly. The winner of the Clare-Offaly game will be fine.
Yeah. That's their... Yeah, exactly. So that's their base, really. Mm. They'll be desperate to win it.
So Clare-Offaly at Cedros and Connell's 6:30 tomorrow evening for Manus Sligo in Brewster Park, and then Enniskillen at 5 o'clock. And then on Sunday in the Tottenham quarterfinals, you have Limerick and Wexford at the TUS Gaelic Grounds, 3:45. Before that, at 1:15 in Knockram is Wicklow against Westmeath. Westmeath have been flying as well. That's another team who could well go all the way in the Tottenham Cup.